Good afternoon. This is Joel Whitaker, editor of the newsletter on newsletters. And today we're talking with Matt Salt, who is the executive director of the Specialized Information Publishers Association, which has had a number of changes in the last, 18 months, I would guess. And I think they're all for the better. As longtime readers of the newsletter on newsletters know, I was not very enthused about the direction of the association for several years. And actually, the newsletter on newsletters was quite critical. But I think that the association has found its footing once again and is set to move forward. And I'm going to give at least half of the credit for that to Matt Salt. And actually, I would give him more credit than that, but he's a good association executive. So he's going to tell us that, no, the credit all goes to the board and to the volunteer leadership. So, Matt, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Joe?
I'm excellent. Before we actually get into the association, tell me just a little bit about where you come from and where you've been and how you ended up in this job, because you weren't always an association executive.
No, this is my first sort of foray into association, to the association management world. As you can tell by my accent, I am not a native of this land. I moved over to the States about 11 years ago when I was working for the Financial Times. And then I went to work as publisher at a small publisher in Falls Church called FDA News, and did that for about 10 years. And then when you sort of get involved with any association, if you volunteer enough, sometimes you look behind you and you've all of a sudden been offered the job of taking it over. And so that's sort of what happened here, because it was, you know, a career path for me as a publisher was never aimed at going into an association. But I think the similarities between a sort of a modern-day community-based association and a modern-day SIP, as we call them, Specialized Information Publishers, is relatively similar. And so the opportunity to have a crack at helping SIPA grow going forward was too great to pass up.
Well, that's just terrific. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to do well. At least your first year or so in office has been very impressive, as it has turned out. And what really caught my attention was two things. One was the redesign of the annual conference, moving it from the Mayflower Hotel over to the Capitol Hilton, both still in Washington, D.C., both centrally located in downtown, so people could get to it from wherever they came. You know, and if you flew in and wanted to stay in downtown D.C., you could do so. If you wanted to stay out at an airport hotel, you could do that and easily get in on Metro. And, you know, and I thought that was really a terrific thing. And I liked the way the flow was set up to bring people through the exhibit hall into the meeting rooms, so that whether people wanted to or not, they had to at least go by and smile at your vendors, which I know is an important thing. Secondly, it seems to me that in connection with that you all have found your footing, that, in fact, the association has come to recognize that it's a conference producer as versus an association that lobbies or an association that publishes books or whatever. And that's a good thing. And thirdly, you know, I think that the redesign of the website itself shows a whole new outlook of being member-friendly and user-friendly. And it's a much different feel to me in looking at the website than it used to be, which I frankly thought was just too much selling and not enough helping members. And yet, looking at your website today, you know, right on the front page, it's easy for members to sign in. There's at least two places to sign in if you're a member. There's a big button that tells you to join the SIPA family. There's a little bit of sales copy on the front page, but not, you know, in your face promoting the latest meeting or whatever. You have a nice calendar over on the side. So, Matt, why don't you talk to us a little bit about your website and how this fits in with the whole change that's taken place at SIPA?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been here now for just over a year. So it's 13 months now. And I think one of the things that you get an opportunity to do when you're in this type of position is not only do you have you know, obviously certain action tasks and work that you need to do, one of the sort of the fun parts of this job is that you actually get an opportunity to talk to members and to try and understand what it is they want. Because obviously when I was a member, I knew what I got out of SIPA. And the main thing that I got out of SIPA was the networking. And it's very hard to, be in a position when you are a global trade association, as we are. You know, obviously we are 80% focused in the US and 20% elsewhere, and the majority of that is in Europe and in the UK. But it's very difficult to have networking happen, which if it is your main asset, you can't just have networking happen in physical meetings, because that's just not possible. We don't have enough of them. We don't have the geographic spread. And so, you know, when we have members in, as we do, in Germany, this is the one that I use as an example, I need to think about what I'm doing for that member today. And what if that member has any questions, what are they going to be able to do to get those answers? And we needed to basically become best in class at an online community. And that was the whole focus of this, because SIPA's strength is in its networking. And I think, as you alluded to, we maybe have gone down the road of becoming more of a conference organization than actually serving the needs of the members, which is fundamentally giving them answers to questions they have about issues they're facing from like-minded people in the industry. And that's, again, another beauty of SIPA, is that you have the open and honest networking that you get within this organization is, I think, second to none, because you're in a situation where you're talking to a publisher in a company that is most probably not competitive to you, but the way he's executing his business is identical to you. And so that you can then basically just benchmark off them and find out if they've done something or if they're having the same problems as you. Is your marketing not working the way it was 6 months ago? And people are going to give you an honest answer, and that's invaluable. And up until we launched the new site, the only way that you could really interact with members, obviously apart from the old-fashioned way of flicking through the directory and picking up the phone, was through the listserv. And we had a listserv that was not connected to our site, and it was not that interactive with any of the other aspects of the online communities. And so we decided to go ahead and put together a site that would not only encompass the forums, the listservs, building up different communities, but have all the chapters have their own areas on the site, have the main forum, so that people can start to communicate. And it's going to take time, and it's going to take some education and some work on our behalf to build that up. But the whole point of the site was fundamentally, number one thing that's meant to happen on this site is the promotion of networking abilities between members. Now, obviously, through the site, we're also, it's our conference management system. So we are obviously going to be selling conferences and things like that through it. But it's a place where we can also have the newsletters up online. The SIPA Alert Daily gets posted to it. All the research reports that we're now starting to come out. Because one of the things that I think stopped happening over the last few years was some of the benchmarking that SIPA used to do, that I always personally used to find very useful. The memorandum from council, we've just published our first one at the beginning of this year, again, because there was a hiatus of about 3 or 4 years, which to me, the quarterly memorandum from council was also very useful. And so having that all in one place, all actionable by the members, having them able to log in, look at profiles, connect with people directly very soon. I've just got an email this morning from Apple saying that our iPhone app is, whatever the status is, it's just about to be ready for people to go and download. So that, you know, you'll basically have the forums and the membership directory in an app on your iPhone, and that's obviously going to be a free app to members. And to me, that will be really useful, because it's the way that from your iPhone you'll be able to connect with people. So, you know, we're having to look at Android technology next, but right now it's the iPhone. So the whole focus of what I'm trying to do now at SIPA is not only online but offline as well, when we have our meetings, is make sure that we give everybody as many opportunities as we can to network. And when you mentioned the conference, it was not a very difficult decision, because I don't know for anybody that's ever been to the Mayflower, going down to some of the basement rooms was just, A, not very pleasant, B, very awkward to get to, and the general layout of the hotel was not conducive to people flowing, and especially not to our vendors, who were stuck away in a room and you'd have to purposely go in there. And so the whole layout at the Hilton just lends itself to a much better feeling. Everybody's all on one floor. As you mentioned, you have to pass through the exhibitors. And because one of the things that we're also working on is trying to make sure that we're not just treating our vendor members as either a piggy bank or a source of funding, because we also have to serve them, because they pay their dues just the same as publisher members. And I think, you know, we actually started in the fall of last year. We had a town hall style meeting with the vendors, just asking them what they wanted from us. And that was a useful start, and we need to do more of those, because I think they obviously have a major contribution to the industry as well.
They certainly do. So I gather that the way you envision your new website is, if you will, as the hub of a spoke, and off of this spoke will come opportunities for people to do what used to be done on the listservs and for chapters and all that. But if somebody wants to know what's going on in SIPA now, they don't have to hit 25 different websites or email addresses or something. They can just come to your website, and from there they can go off to events, or they can go off to resources and so on down the line.
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, my utopian dream of where I'd like things to be in 5 years is that if a SIPA member is sitting there, whether they're a vendor or a publisher, and they have an issue that they want to solve, they don't go to Google, they don't go to Yahoo or anywhere else. The first thing they think about is, let's go to SIPA, and go to SIPAonline.com, because we may not be able to create all the information and have all the answers, but I want to become the curator of that information. So if somebody else is offering better training courses than we do, or if there's better research out there, not necessarily better, but the research that you need, that you'd come to us, find it, and then go over there to buy it, or go over there and get it. We don't necessarily need to be the people that have everything or reinvent the wheel. There are 5 million conferences out there on a daily basis on every single subject you can imagine. And if somebody else is going to do something that's of interest to our members, then let's form a relationship with that organization and get access to our members so that they can see that those events are happening.
That sounds like a whole cultural mindset change, not only for SIPA, but frankly for any trade association I know, or frankly most publishers. Most trade associations and most publishers want to own their customer and not share, and, you know.
I know, and I think it's something that came to me. It's not like this is a revelation and I'm the only person to have thought about it, but we had a speaker, Perry Hewitt, 2 years ago at the SIPA conference, and I can't quite remember her exact title, but she's something like the Director of Digital Content at Harvard University. And her whole presentation was on the mind shift of Harvard, which has gone from being content creator to content curator. And because they were basically, now you're facing a situation where people are searching for information, and they can be anywhere on the planet. And if you're in a situation where Harvard realizes that there are other academic institutions on the planet that do some pretty good research, and that why would you want to sort of blinker that information out from people that are trying to learn something from you? So what they've decided to do is they've decided to curate. So if somebody at Oxford University in the UK has written a piece on something that is of interest to somebody that's studying at Harvard, then don't hide it from them. And that, to me, sort of said, well, why do we as publishers, as you alluded to, try and blinker and keep everybody within our own organization? Because the idea here is that my ultimate goal is to obviously grow the membership, but have that membership renewal decision not really be a decision. It's more or less have an auto-renew. When it comes up to time to renew, you say SIPA, you tick the box, because you know that we're serving you in an open, honest way, that if you want to find something out about what's happening, we're not saying SIPA's the only place that does it. It's happening everywhere. So have a go at finding it and come to us to find it, because if you come to us to find it, that renewal decision will be simple.
That sounds like a whole 180 degree turn in the mindset of of either publishers or other
yep.
trade associations. And I think it's very wonderful. Have you seen any change in your membership trends at all since you started this drive?
We're really just at the forefront of starting it. You know, we've just gone through, SIPA's had a strategic planning process that we've just sort of finished. It's going to be presented to the board at the next board meeting. Mm-hmm. We set up a strategic planning committee, and you know, the goals of the association are to increase membership pretty dramatically by 2014. And that obviously goes in part by having the information and the value of the organization in place at the same time as having a major push towards growing membership, which has not happened in the recent past.
No, in fact, after I took over newsletter on newsletters, I decided to see how much I might be able to do things with SIPA, if you will. And I was astounded to find that the membership totals per the directory had fallen, I think, to somewhere around 450 members.
Mm-hmm.
And this really shocked me, because when I was treasurer of the association, back when it was known as the Newsletter Publishers Association, which tells you that I am truly a dinosaur.
That's three or four names ago.
Three or four names and three decades.
Yep.
We had around 850 members, so I was really quite stunned to see that, and then to see what a large percentage were over in the over in Europe also. So I'm glad to see that you're setting ambitious growth objectives for your membership, because I don't
it's the lifeblood of the whole organization. Because
as I said earlier,
the networking is truly, to me, was always a thing that, you know, it's very hard to put a value on that. But the issue that you have is that if you have dwindling membership, you have less people to it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You have less people to network with. Therefore, the chance of you finding somebody you're going to bond with is going to be less. And so, therefore, also, we do still have a fair amount of the revenue from the organization coming from the major conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have less members, you have less people coming to the conference, and so you're in that spiral of decline. And so it's time, you draw a line in the sand and say, okay, we've come through a pretty major, economic downturn, 2008, 2009. Obviously, membership was, struggling as in any organization, and now we've stabilized and it's now at a flat base level, and we're saying, okay, that's it. We are now purely in growth mode and looking to the future, and in order to do that, you have to have the product. And so we started the product with the website. We're going to start rolling out, as I said, the memorandum from councils are going to come out. The research reports are going to start coming back out again. And a lot of this is right now being funded by the foundation, which is, obviously we're very thankful to them for funding these sort of grant applications that we're putting forward. But we're also starting to think about more online training for people, so that we can get. We've got a little notepad up on the piece of paper on the wall in the conference room here. It's called Operation Footprint, and my aim is to get the footprint of SIPA deeper within membership companies. Because right now you have, say, you normally have one evangelist sitting there saying this is SIPA's great, then you go down to the next level and there may be one or two people, and then below that nobody's ever heard of SIPA. So we need to produce some training that's going to basically, when somebody starts in a SIPA company, we're going to say, okay, you need to take the SIPA training on what it takes to be a direct marketer in this market. Okay, you've just come out of J school. Here's what you have to do to write in the way that SIPA publishers write. So that basically, it means that when you finish writing your whatever you're writing, it means the person reading it is going to be able to do their job better than before they read it. And so I just think executing on some of that stuff will just help incredibly for this growth that we're aiming for.
I think it will too, and I think it's a very smart strategy. So, we're really happy to see you doing that. You've made some other changes too, Matt. One of the things I noticed about midway through last year is all of a sudden, instead of getting bombarded with a series of notices about there was this phone-in conference or that phone-in conference available, if only I would pay $199 for it, all of a sudden they started to become free. Is this part of your strategy, or am I just lucky to be on the receiving end of the free mailings?
Yeah, keep quiet. Nobody else knows about it. No. it's trying to offer value to members, and over the first 6 months of last year, we just kept hearing from people that, the webinars are great, but wouldn't it be great if it could be part of, you know, the membership or part of something else, if it could be free, because it would really help us sort of spread the word within our organization. And so we basically tried to put together a model that would enable us to do that, and that's what we've done. At the moment, they're being partly funded by the foundation, but the aim is to try, you know, clearly, even though we are a trade association, we still need to generate revenue. Now, membership is about a third of our revenue, and the rest has to come from other places. So you still got to remember that we're still a sort of a, you know, the finances and the business side of it still matter. Mm-hmm. But what I've got to try and do is I've got to generate as many products or as many benefits that I can give the members that are free to increase the value of that membership dollar amount. So when they're looking at the dollar amount, they think, yeah, did we get value from it this year? Well, heck, yeah, we had 47 people attend all their webinars, and that was great value. So that's the plan.
And that's an excellent plan. I think you're on the right track there, although you don't need me to tell you that. Talk to me for a minute, though, about the other benefits of one thing, just as a passing thought. To some extent, what you've sort of done with the webinars is you've taken the money that you might have put into producing a printed newsletter like Hotline used to be, coming out every other week or whatever, and moved it over to producing the webinars, which now serve somewhat the same function that Hotline did in days gone by, of providing instruction on how to do this and how to do that. Is that sort of accurate?
Sort of. You know, Hotline,
sort of.
We still publish Hotline. It still comes out monthly.
Monthly, yeah.
I think it's just, it's like any of the way sort of we are in this sort of the digital environment we're in now, is that different people want to receive information in different formats. You know, who knows, our next free offering may be video.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've just got to try and work out that people want to receive information in different formats. And if there's a way that we can fund doing that, then we will. And so that's sort of where the webinars came up. Because we have the SIPR alert going out every day. Ron writes that.
Right.
Ron puts together a newsletter, which is now monthly, and you know now we're putting on the webinars, and so it's something maybe next we'll be putting on video. So there is a strategy in place to delivering. It's sort of the same as any publisher now, is that you've got to try and deliver in multiple formats on multiple platforms.
And you certainly have to listen to your customers, your readers, your members or whatever they happen to be, to see how they want to get their information and when they want to get it. There's
no question, because I just had a meeting first thing this morning, and the whole question is we're putting together one of the research reports that we're putting together that we're going to publish at the annual conference is on the business models for monetizing content.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting there for about 3 hours talking about the different business models, and in the end it sort of, we came back to sort of talking about, okay, how are we going to open this up? And it's sort of going back to some of the fundamentals, is that there's a lot of new cool stuff out there, and there's a lot of new cool ways to deliver content. But fundamentally speaking, if you don't deliver it to the way your customers want, it's just so basic that it's just not going to work. And so when somebody's going to read this report and they're going to say, okay, I need to have an online website, you know, that has modular portals and things. Well, are you sure? You know, is that what your customers are asking? And I think we get too caught up in whether we should have apps and have our content tablet friendly, and we don't actually spend the time, of which we could spend a lot more time and save a lot of money, by just talking to the customers. And that's why on the new site it's a very basic starting point, but there's a little feedback button right at the bottom of the site that if you want to just say anything, it's basically there for the launch of the site, but it will morph into being, just give us some feedback. We're going to start surveying members on a very, very regular basis, asking them what they want, what do they think about things, because we haven't done that for eons, and also do the survey so that it doesn't take you 2 weeks to fill out the survey, because, you know, some of the surveys that used to come out of SIPR for the, you know, the finance surveys would take an awful long time to get the information together. And I think what we want to do is it's got to be shorter, quicker, sharper, so that we can be more reactive to what people want.
Sure. And maybe not such a long encyclopedic survey, but something that targets this time, and maybe in 2 months,
yeah,
another segment of the finances or whatever. And
same thing. Absolutely.
Going forward, yeah. Excellent. Looking at your website, under the thing of SIPA benefits, what I was expecting to find was that, you know, you could get discounts to using Hertz autos and life insurance and all this other garbage. But instead, what you've got under there is a series of quotes from your members, which I think is absolutely fabulous. I mean, you know, a broad range of members with really good, insightful comments. But do you have any benefits outside of what you were describing, the website, the conferences, the webinars, the special reports, or is that where your benefit package is going to be for a while?
I think it's got to be focused on what the true, you can list 1,000 different benefits, and when you look at a lot of trade associations and you look at publishers, it's the, you know, the sales copy is, it's easy to make it sound like you are offering a lot,
mm-hmm.
but when you're delivering not a lot, it's not that impressive. And I think we are so, but our product is so biased towards the networking that that's such a big part of it and such a big chunk of what we do, because there are other benefits that we offer. You can get special rates off insurance with Access Insurance. We have a partnership with them. You do get 2 hours of free consulting with Levine, Sullivan, Koch and Schultz. So there are other sort of tangible, and in the UK we have a set up with a company where it's a business hotline. So if you have any business issues, HR issues, you can phone them and get advice that way. So there are other benefits that when you are coming through the sales process, we'll talk to you about. But it, to me, if you're going to join an association to get a break on insurance, that maybe isn't the key reason why you should be joining.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, we have, as you said, just sort of launched the site. We were thinking about, because here we did have on the benefits page a list of all the benefits.
Right.
And to me, it's I don't know. It's just personally, I find it a bit of a turn off just to sort of see all these things. I just like to hear from people.
Right.
So.
Well, that makes sense to me. I was just you know, as I say, it was again a different approach to the question. You know.
Yep.
I am so used to seeing, you know, the 25 item listing of, you know, the Hertz car and the airline ticket discount through whoever,
yep.
and on and on and on and on and on. And I never use them. I look at them. I say, well, isn't that wonderful? And then I never ever think about, you know, using them, which probably makes me a bad member of a bunch of groups. But
well, not necessarily. I think that's the case, and I think that's why we're just not highlighting them as much as we maybe should. You know, I don't know, because to me it's, you know, we do offer other things. It's just that's not really the reason why you need to be a member of SIPA.
Right. Yeah, it would seem to me, for what it's worth, and I am without a doubt the world's worst marketer, there's no doubt about it, mm-hmm. but it would seem to me that, that you know, that sort of thing is almost an asterisk to the other question of why are people joining, and in the case of SIPA, I think you're absolutely right that the target is networking. Even 20 years ago, that's what we heard from members, that they really liked the ability to network and meet with other people who did much the same sort of thing they did. So
yeah, that's it. That's, you know, it's sort of even, to me, it's, and I've always been toying with this in some of the presentations that I've done, is talking about the humanization of search, because that's sort of what SIPA is to me. It's, you know, we can all go to Google and type something in, but what I want SIPA to become is that if you've got a problem, you can phone us, and hopefully, A, we have enough experience on staff to be able to solve that problem, or we know somebody that can. And so it's putting a, you know, I think the whole sort of trade association, the whole SIPA thing, is just putting a face to Google even. Because, you know, if you've got an issue and you're, whatever your issue may be, all right, I'm trying to understand, you know, somebody is passing my PDF around or somebody is violating my copyright. You know, you can go to Google and search and stuff like that, but I want them to be able to phone up here and say, hey, Matt, what do we do about this? What's the best thing that we can do? And then we can talk to them about whatever the best course of action would be. So it's that wishing to become the, not necessarily a consultant, but be consultative.
Interesting distinction, and one that I would not have expected to have heard, but that's a very interesting distinction between consultant and consultative, and I think it's a valid point. So where is SIPA going to go now? You've said that you've got this spoken wheel type thing centered on your website to facilitate networking. You're looking to grow members. What should we look for out of SIPA in the next 6 months or year?
Well, to me, it's going to be, I would love to see robust usage of the website. So we've got to push very hard to get people onto the site, to get to the, getting them to use all the benefits that we have there. You're going to see a lot more webinars coming out, free webinars for members. So it's going to be sort of much of the same, but we're going to basically, surely within the next 6 months, launch a full e-learning program. We started a certificate program at the Miami conference in December. That was fully video recorded. We're going to put that up online and have that as a certificate program online, so that we'll have e-learning, and then we'll have different times where people can come to an actual event to take the certificates. And I think we're going to be, you know, really pushing. I think one of the biggest pushes both Julie, who's the associate director, and she's the main driver behind this part of it, is the chapters. Is really trying to see if we can get the chapters, because you know, certainly know this better than I do, but looking back in old files, we seem to have an awful lot of chapters about 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And now we don't have that many.
Yep,
so we're starting to energize the chapters, and DC's up and running well. We're going to get New England up and running. New York's just had a lunch in December. We have this week, Andy, the president, and I are going to the Northern California and Southern California chapters. The UK, SIPA UK, has now been branded SIPA Europe. So we're starting to sort of really have a push not only into to growing the UK again, but getting it all sort of into a more sort of continental Europe type thing. So just getting more grassroots activities going in the local areas, and at most of our meetings, they're paid meetings and they are member only meetings. But all the chapter meetings are, not all of them, but the majority of the chapter meetings are open to non-members as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be, and where we're trying to push it is more towards free Dutch treat type things. Come and have a chat, just mix with the industry. And so that, you know, if you then, after having been to a chapter meeting for a few times, you realize that actually this group has a lot to offer me, then, you know, we'll obviously follow up with membership drives. But the idea is to form an area where people, or you know, whether it's a monthly dinner, whatever it may be, where people can come who are in this industry. Because the one challenge that I think SIPA has is that there are a lot of SIPs out there and they don't know it. So
mm-hmm.
There's many people out there that could benefit from getting within SIPA, and I think that's where we've got sort of a slightly rosy future, is that you know, our market is larger than we may think.
It certainly is should be a large market, I would think, because there's an awful lot of specialized publishers of one type or another. You were at one point, when they announced SIPA as the new name, part of the justification, Matt, you may recall, or this may actually go before your time, was that, well, we could bring together directory publishers and conference producers and newsletter producers and I guess maybe magazine people, although they have their own association, and so on and so forth. How is that working? How do you, what, in addition to newsletter publishers, to the extent that there are newsletter publishers, pure newsletter publishers now, in addition to those guys, who do you see as your primary potential membership target?
Yeah, this is something that we discussed in a fair bit of depth, because I think, you know, as the industry and as technology changed, it's very easy to run after, because now more or less anybody can publish words.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy to run after and say, okay, now we're going to open up to the bloggers, we're going to open up to anybody that does anything that has anything to do with content. And I think that sort of weakens what we actually are. And I think if we're very clear as to who we're going to go after, obviously that becomes a much easier road to go down. And so fundamentally speaking, if you are a producer of content in any format, so that could be events, that could be websites, it could be print, it could be magazines even, if you sell that content and you want to monetize that content, then that's who SIPA will serve. So, to one side, the ad-based controlled CERC publishers are most probably, you know, we know that a lot of them, that is, let me just say, that is most probably not the market that we're going to be going after. But we know that a lot of them are now looking to us as ad markets are tightening. They're looking at ways, because they have an awful lot of content. So they're looking at ways to monetize content. So therefore, SIPA can help them if they want to move into the monetizing content. But it's basically fundamentally got to be somebody that is producing quality content that they wish to sell. Now, whatever that sales model may be, it could be a subscription-based model, it could be a one-off model, it could be a video, it could be a newsletter, and, you know, heaven forbid, an 8 to 12-page print newsletter, whatever it may be.
Very, very interesting. But it sounds like you have it clearly focused. You're after the people who sell content as versus any other way of distributing it.
Yes.
Which makes a lot of sense. Well, this is terrific stuff. So you had a strategic planning meeting. You want to give us the inside story on what happened at the strategic planning meeting?
Yeah, it was. It came out of the last board meeting, two board meetings ago, sorry, in October. And, you know, the situation was, I think, as anybody did coming out of the last, whether you want to call it recession, whatever it may be, the economic downturn 2008, 2009, you know, you had to look very closely at the way the organization was structured, the personnel we had here, the technology that we were using. And so we spent the last year during Guy Sakala's presidency really battening down the hatches of the association, getting financial sort of systems, proper financial systems in place, sort of consolidating, working through workflow processes, and just really making sure that we had the fundamentals of a viable business, as it were, going forward. And we achieved that last year. And then when Andy came in as president this year, it was, what are we going to do now? Because, you know, if it stayed the same, SIPA has not really had, and I don't know for how long, but at least in my sort of memory, has not really had a very active sales acquisition, you know, the member acquisition strategy. And I think it suddenly came up at the board meeting that, well, okay, we've had three strategic plans over the last 10 years, and we need to do one now that's actually going to work and be executed on. And so this is where, with the help of Bob Brady, who is next year's president, we put together a very action, deadline, metric-based strategic plan that covers the area of acquisition with metrics against that, of numbers of where we're going to end up by 2014, how we're going to do that on a year-by-year basis, who's responsible to do it, then down as into member retention as to what we're going to do for the members to make them hopefully want to stay a member of SIPA. And that's obviously not just necessarily having a static renewal process. It's all the activities that we've discussed on this call, such as chapters, webinars, online communities, research, how we're going to fund and structure that, and then to other sources of revenue and products that we can be offering, whether they're paid for or not by the members, and that was a whole structure to it. So right now, we're in a position of putting plans together, because, you know, one of the simplest things, and it's a lovely little column that we have, and it, in there it says, develop a sales plan. Well, that's a lovely four words. You've actually got to do it. So right now we're in some of the execution phase of doing some of these things. And so, you know, I think because of this strategic planning process that we've been through, SIPA now has an incredibly clear and transparent direction going forward on how we as an organization will serve our members, how we will recruit our members, and then when they're in the membership, what we offer them as either part of the membership dues, benefits, or additional things for them to buy. And to me, it's been able to map it out very clearly, and it puts us in a good sort of state and a good frame for the next 3 or 4 years, I think, to actually take advantage of, again, where the market's going, because the market's what's going to drive this. And right now, there are loads and loads of organizations out there trying to work out how to monetize content. And we want Sipper to become the place where you can learn how to do that.
The place where you go. Excellent. Yep. Excellent. Now, I presume from what you're saying that given the stage you're at right now, we shouldn't expect to see any major changes by the annual conference, which will be this year. You actually moved it up a little bit, didn't you? It's now going to be in May instead of early June?
Correct. It's just one. It's a one-year glitch.
Uh-huh.
Yep. When we moved to the new, I'm not going to blame anybody before me, but this was just the availability the hotel had, because for 2013, 2014, we're back to the normal June time frame. Mm-hmm. But this was just the availability that the hotel had, and now obviously we're on their radar, and so we're going to get it sort of there. And you know, I know I've not really spoken to anybody about the next point I'm going to make, but, you know, who knows? It's been in D.C. forever. Maybe it's logical for it to stay in D.C., but there's always an opportunity, as with many trade associations, where the annual conference moves around.
Sure.
But who knows? That's something to think about down the future. That's not on our radar right now because, as I said, we're booked out to 2014 in D.C.
Excellent. Well, this is all very exciting, Matt, and we certainly are happy to see the changes taking place in SIPA. We hope the organization, with this new strategic plan and under your executive leadership, will thrive and will return once again to being the vibrant entity that it once upon a time was. And it certainly sounds like you have a plan and a direction and a strategy for going there. So this is all excellent news. Is there anything you want to tell us about the annual conference before we sign off here? Any touting you want to do, if you will?
Well, I think it's just, you know, the annual conference is again, it's obviously, as far as the association is concerned, it's the major sort of financial revenue source that we have in the organization. But it's also, it's sort of, it's like the annual coming together of the dysfunctional family. And so... You know, it's just, it is one of the things that we have to always do. It's like when you're looking at Twitter, and Twitter has tweet-ups where you actually get together physically. And I think anything that we're doing now, and obviously we're all based, you know, 80% of us are based in the U.S. over in a very large country, and, you know, 20% are based in Europe. And I think the annual conference offers the one opportunity where we all get together.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, was always just really useful. So the programming was always good. I think the programming is strong now. But I think it's also just an opportunity to get together as a group. And it's the one opportunity that you do have in a sort of a family like this to do that. And that's as good as a plug as I can do, because obviously, you know, I think the program is super that we're putting together. I think the venue works, and I think everything like that. But the fundamental thing to me is, this is meant to be a community. This is meant to be a group of like-minded people, and this is the one big event where everybody gets together. And so it would be great to see as many people there as we can get, just purely from a sort of an annual reunion perspective.
Sure. Well, Matt, this sounds absolutely terrific. We'll look forward to the June conference, which now will be the May conference this year.
Yep.
We look forward to much progress with SIPA, and we certainly wish you well. And for those folks who will be listening to this recording, we hope that you will take a hard look if you're not currently involved with SIPA and see what benefits it may have for you as you develop your newsletter business. Matt Salt, Executive Director at SIPA, thank you so much for your time, and we will see everybody else again on the telephone, so to speak, soon.